I know that we mostly talk about fun things on this show. It's called Moolala, for goodness sake. But we also talk about important things. And sometimes those topics are not, air quotes, fun, but we still need to talk about them. We have been talking both on this show and in our culture about anti-Black racism for a number of months now. George Floyd's murder is just one example of the racial violence that African Americans have endured for many, many, many years, not just in the United States, but here in Canada as well. And in addition to racial violence, and as it relates to this show, there's also the challenge that Black communities, members of the Black community, face when it comes to economic violence. Lynette Colfani-Cox is a personal finance expert and founder of The Money Coach. She joins us now from Houston, Texas. Hello there.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
One of the things that we promised to do was to keep talking about racism, to not let it be the news of the week, the passing fad, because change takes time, energy, perseverance. How do you address the fatigue that some people have about this topic? Like, we should have just like solved this already.
Well, you know, I think that this is going to be perhaps the biggest challenge as it relates to getting to economic parity, addressing the root causes and the solutions for economic violence, and for promoting anti-Black, anti-racism as a whole. People are going to be fatigued by it. It's uncomfortable. It is not, as you said, particularly fun to talk about. And certainly, throughout North America as a whole, I think that there's been such a long history of sort of letting things slide and just kind of going along and kind of making nice to whether that's in the workplace, through our own personal friendships and interpersonal relationships, et cetera. So that we kind of got to the point where we just didn't talk about the things that were swept under the rug. And so I don't have a very easy answer, but I do know that we have to persist. I do know that we have to raise the level of consciousness. We have to keep this at the forefront. And so that's why I'm so super excited to talk to you today and happy to have a more extended platform to talk about these issues, because they really do matter. And are they hard? Yes, they're very hard to talk about. But it's only when we kind of overcome these that I really do feel that we're going to be so much better off as a society, as a race, as a human race.
Canadians can get quite smug about racism, and we're so polite too. What a lot of people don't realize is that Amy Cooper, the white woman in Central Park who called the police on a Black man who was out birding, is Canadian. She's Canadian. Yeah, she's Canadian. So I think that's important context, because in terms of our history and our knowledge of the slavery that occurred in Canada, it is really, 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 really low. I want you to define this term, economic violence.
Well, economic violence refers to the set of situations or circumstances, the experiences that occur when one person, organization, group, or entity basically financially subjugates or financially abuses another party. So we don't think about it in terms, very often, because of course, the more common forms of violence, of course, people know about domestic violence or physical violence. Some people even talk about emotional violence in terms of, mental abuse and things of that nature. But economic violence is just as heinous. It has just as negative and deleterious types of effects, and it can be so long lasting that we need to kind of arrest these cycles and these situations and confront them and frankly name them for what they are and then start to undo them.
Most of our listeners will be aware of slavery, 250 years of slavery in the U.S. Canada had a system, but over a shorter period of time. It's The period after that that I want to start with, not to negate the hundreds and hundreds of years of slavery, but in the interests of time, most people have no clue about the Black Codes. You write about the Black Codes. What are they?
Right. So Black Codes essentially were a series of laws that were implemented in the United States right after Reconstruction. So you may recall from your any history lesson that, you know, the Civil War, 1861 to 1865, and the Reconstruction era after that was a period from 1865 through 1877. This was a very pivotal time in American history, because essentially what happened is that even though slavery was outlawed after this period, in a de facto way, really the same systems were still in place, because these laws, these racist Black codes, were created to enforce the power structure, to advantage white people, and to disenfranchise or to hold Black, or to hold back, that is, Black people from a social standpoint, from an economic standpoint, from a political standpoint. So for example, the Black codes would not let African Americans do a variety of things. You know, right now we think about people who are entrepreneurial, for example, or people who want to have a side hustle, people who want to have, you know, more than one job, have multiple streams of income. Well, you couldn't do that if you were an African American living in the 1860s and 1870s in America, because the Black codes prohibited you from having more than one job. If you wanted to own property, they said, nope, can't do that. They really did restrict in a lot of ways the economic opportunities that Black people had, and it laid the foundation for a later period of time, which again, your audience might be more familiar with, the sort of Jim Crow era, because essentially the Black codes, those laws segued through from the 1860s and 70s well into the 1950s. And then that's when the Jim Crow laws kicked in, again, codifying sort of in a very legal institutional way, discrimination against African Americans in a whole host of ways.
The two shockers for me that I just want to flag on the Jim Crow laws is around housing, both redlining by the banks and also actions on the part of the federal government on insurance. Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, basically, you know, if you have a government insured loan, say an FHA loan, that kind of thing, in the Federal Housing Administration, you know, the government is supporting those mortgages by and making it making lending happen more freely. However, here in the States, what happened was that the government basically flat out refused to insure any home loans for Black people. So what happened was that we saw this time period where, on the one hand, white people were building a solid middle class as a result of the government effectively underwriting home ownership in the white community. This was in the 1930s, 1940s, even through the 1960s. So all those loans, they were getting approved for white people. But at the same time, the government said, oh no, if they were Black, don't underwrite those loans. Don't give them a mortgage to help them to achieve home ownership. And we know, of course, that home ownership is a huge part of wealth building.
Yeah. So it's unimaginable to think about that. And yet you write that there's research that shows there is still discrimination that exists on mortgages. Can you give us an example?
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank, has shown that flat out Black people are subjected to higher interest rates, greater rates of denial when it comes to mortgage lending, et cetera. There's Stanford research on the same front, UC Berkeley researchers. They've all shown right now in the year 2020, this isn't just something from, oh, that happened back in the, you know, Jim Crow era of 1950s and the 1960s. Even to this day, you could be a Black borrower who has, say, a $75,000 a year income, a 700 credit score, you know, $50,000 in the bank in terms of assets and money for a down payment. Put yourself up against a white borrower with the exact same stats, and what's going to happen? The Black individual is still going to get denied more frequently that approval for a home loan, or they're going to get approved at a loan rate that is higher than the white person, again, with the same exact financial stats. So that's pretty shocking.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. All of this remains shocking. We are not desensitized to it. I wish we had more time to talk actions. I'm afraid we are out of time, but we will have you back again, and we will talk about some of the work that is unfolding really around the world to address economic violence and also, I don't know what the right phrase is, level the playing field, or just make our future much more compelling for everyone than our past has been. Thank you, Lynette.
Thank you for having me.
Lynette Kalfani-Cox is a personal finance expert, founder of The Money Coach. She joined us from Houston, Texas.